This program has been brought to you by Cider Week, New York City.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I am your host, Joe Campanelli, and it is a gray, a cloudy, foggy day here in Brooklyn, in Bushwick today. Makes me think of the hills of Barolo. We'll get to that later. But before we get started, if you do like In the Drink, you can always listen to us on heritageradionetwork.com/InTheDrink. You can listen to all of our past episodes. We're nearing 150 now, which blows my mind. Or on iTunes, where you can subscribe and just get that kind of automatically uploaded every time a new episode comes out. And if you like In the Drink, you can come visit me at one of our restaurants, Dell'Anima, Lartuzzi, Anfora, and Lopicio. Altalinea, which was our summer pop-up, is now closed. Thanks to all of you who joined us for a frozen Negroni this summer. And I am super excited today. This time of year makes me want to drink Barolo, my favorite wine in the world, made from the Nebbiolo grape. We've just gotten our white truffles into the restaurants from Alba. It is, by all reports, an outstanding vintage for the wine, and not such a great vintage for the truffles, unfortunately, but maybe that will change. And that being said, we have a Barolo producer in-house today, and we're very excited to welcome Raffaele Seghesio from the Renzo Seghesio Winery in Barolo. Welcome to the studio.
Hello, everybody.
And we also have from Vinaioli Selections, Kevin Hedges, who represents these wines.
Hello.
Welcome. Good to have you guys in the studio today. Truffles are on the mind of my mind right now, actually. Is that true? That's what I've been telling our guests, that at least, our staff, that a good Barolo vintage isn't always the best truffle vintage. Have you experienced a good vintage for the wine so far?
You should ask this to my uncle. Usually, he goes out with his dog to find truffles. Usually, but this year the news are that the quality is slowly increasing, but the quantity is less.
Very low, right? For the wines, nice dry fall.
Yeah, it was. It was really an hot vintage. But in the end, we had some days of rain that put everything in order. And so actually, we're quite satisfied, yeah.
Yeah, the Italian winemakers I've seen who've been to the market the last couple of weeks have generally had a big smile on it. It's been much more relaxed than last year at this time.
Yeah, we were a little bit scared about the weather. I mean, in reality, 1 month ago, it was really hot, and so we had an increasing of the volume of alcohol, but there was not so ripeness. Mm-hmm. In the end, we arrived at the good balance. So, as I told you, we are really satisfied, and that is my smile.
That's a big radio smile.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you guys can tell us a little bit about this winery. It is on the smaller side. Not that there are any super large Barolo producers, but tell us the history of your family's winery.
Yeah, my family is the winery and the vice versa, in the sense that I grew up in the winery, but the foundation was made by my father officially, because everybody in my region is producing wine from themselves. It's a sort of dish, and everybody drinks during dinner and so on. But it was born officially in 1978 with the first selection that my father operated on the grapes of several of the best zones for the production of Nebbiolo da Barolo in Piedmont and in Montfort, our village. We're speaking about a really small production. We're a niche production. Mm-hmm. It's our winery produces medially from 50,000 to 60,000 bottles per year. And we are the owner, one of the only owner, one of the best crew for the production of the Nebbiolo da Barolo. It's called Paiana, and it's part one of the best part of the Ginestra Valley. That with the Busia, it's considered one of the best for Barolo.
And tell us what makes Paiana so special, and then Kevin, I'd love to hear from you when you're describing these crews to people who are buying them. I even find I still have so much to learn about the different crews of Barolo, and especially the single vineyards and how they express. But tell us first about Paiana.
Paiana is one of the best expression of long aging Barolos. This is the valley between the two villages of Monforte and the Serra Lunga. This is the soil is white because it's clay, marni, and it was the sea bottom, the sea bed, and we find the shells making our works. That this characteristic with the microclimate and the way we manage the vintage allows us to produce Barolos that are really, really, really long aging. They start with the structure, really, really important structure, a lot of tannicity, and at the beginning they seem a little bit coarse, a little bit strong. But the time makes this wine really, really, really complex, really important.
Yeah. Yeah, I find when I'm speaking with guests, it is it's rare that I get into those specifics, whereas maybe if we were talking about Burgundy, there would be much more into it. And it's more when I'm speaking with winemakers or my other sommelier friends that maybe we talk more about. Do you find that buyers are asking you questions about the crews, and that is something that is important when making their buying determination? Do you feel like you need to study up on those when you go out?
Definitely, I think it's important to sort of get a feel for the differences. I mean, Paiana is within Ginestra, and if you just even compare it to some bottlings, which are just labeled as Ginestra, side by side, you can find it quite different. Really, it's just on the other side of a hill, but the difference is amazing.
Yeah, those expositions in Piedmont are so, so important. You can have the same hill and have three different grapes on one hill, just depending on where it gets more sun.
Yeah, it's the great complexity is, first of all, based on the fact that we live on a soil that is complex. Lange means in Italian tongue. These are these tongues of the land that rise up in ancient periods. And this movement of the soil made a lot of variability, and that you can find in a square kilometers the ground is red for the presence of a lot of iron, then clay, then sandy, and so it's really, really difficult to find the same characteristic in a so small village, a small place. It's one of the factor that change. In the end, we have the weather, how you manage the intention of the producer. So it's impossible to find the same wine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's why we're
endlessly complex. I love. Yeah. I spent a lot of time studying the Masnageti maps, but yeah. I'd still. Do not feel expert at all, even after looking at them for so many times.
Yeah, Masnageti made a great, really great work. Yeah, I told it to him because it's a friend of ours, and because he went directly winery to, and he based his investigation on the past experience that and asking people, old men sitting at the bar of the village, what is the best place in your opinion to produce Barolo, and it's the base, because the knowledge is our first step.
Yeah. And during your first steps, going back to when you were a kid, I mean, saying to me that you're born in Barolo.
In Monforte.
In Monforte,
there
I'm
is
sorry.
A,
that's a
big struggle
crew.
Between Monforte and Barolo villages.
All right, well, within the appellation of Barolo. Yeah. To me, and especially, you know, in Monforte, one of the great areas for extremely high quality wine, it just sounds like such a dream, like to be born into a family that has Barolo vineyards. Wow, like what could be better than that? But did you ever think that, you know, your life was not going to be around wine, and or was your father always, you need to be involved in some way at least with the winery?
Yeah, but my father preferred to give us the, me and my brother, because I have my brother Federico too, working also around the winery, wanted to admit us to have our instruction, and then so that's why I'm a doctor in medicine. I told you I'm an abdominal surgeon, and my brother is an engineer. He's an astronaut. I don't know how you say it. It's aerospaziale, we say in Italy. And but since from when we were kids, we worked directly into the winery. My first thought is when I started to put capsule on the bottles, putting labels, because we were making it by hand. And in the end, we learned everything that, assisting my father, and slowly making by ourselves.
Yeah, that's right, Raphael. You're telling me before we got started, and I think I'd love to share that with the guests. Like, what is your typical day like to be both a surgeon and also spend so much of your day at the winery?
Yeah, I wake up quite early in the morning, and I wash very, very well my hands, and I make a surgical operation. And when my turn is finished, when around 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I go into vineyards. I work, or directly into the winery. Obviously, there is other persons working with me. There is Gianfranco, my father, first of all, because my father is the boss and the mind of everything. But Gianfranco is a guy who works with us, and then we have seasonal people working for us. It's nice.
Is there anything from your life at the winery that is beneficial to your life as a surgeon? And is there anything that you've learned as a surgeon that can help you out in the winery? Is there any overlap there at all?
I can say that I apply something from vineyards into surgery. Yeah. Because you have to understand how to move your hand. When you make the same movement for a lot of times, you learn the property of the movement. When you make our works directly with the plant, with the vines, you repeat a lot of time the same movement, and that concentrate you. It's a sort of Zen movement of your mind. It's interesting.
It's amazing. I imagine in surgery your movements are so finite and minuscule and tiny, and in winemaking they're much grander.
It isn't, because when in vineyards the movement have to be really, really, you have to be careful about what you do, because when for example when you prune, when you tie the vines, if you make a mistake, it's for the whole year. So you have to be careful about what you do.
Wow, that makes a lot of sense. And on that note, we are going to take actually just a quick break. We'll be back with more with Kevin Hedges from Vinaioli Selections and Raffaele Segesio from the winery Renzo Segesio in Barolo right after this.
Cider Week helps to bring profitability to local orchards while reviving heirloom apple varieties by cultivating awareness of craft cider. Cider Week connects cider makers from New York State and select pioneering guest cideries outside the state to buyers from top restaurants, bars, and retail shops across New York City. Those culinary tastemakers, in turn, help increase consumer awareness of cider's pleasures by hosting public events, tastings, dinners, classes, and pairings that build appreciation and demand for regional ciders.
Hi, this is Dave Arnold from Cooking Issues, and I'm here to talk to you about the Museum of Food and Drink, which is finally getting a brick-and-mortar space right here in Brooklyn, New York. So the Museum of Food and Drink is opening the MOFAD Lab, our first laboratory and gallery space, where we will be putting on an exhibition called Making It or Faking It, the history of the flavor industry. And it tackles a very important topic, which is how the food system got to be the way it is now as a result of the intervention of the flavor industry, how that happened. Get your tickets at tickets.mofad.org to come see the first exhibit ever of the Museum of Food and Drink at the MOFAD Lab, brought to you by Infinity on 62 Bayard Street.
All right, and we are back on In the Drink with Segesio Winery. And that is, just to clarify, Renzo Segesio, and not the Segesio in California that makes Zinfandel, I believe, or Fratelli Segesio, which is a winery right across the hill that's making, I would say, slightly more modern wines than the Renzo Segesio. But this is Renzo Segesio Winery, delicious, delicious wines in the Payana crew within Ginestra near Monforte. Kevin, if you're going to position these wines, and you're going to tell people who've never had Segesio before, like, how do you explain, like, where these wines fit into the world of Barolo?
Well, I mean, Monforte d'Alba Barolo usually, I mean, is generalized as a little more muscular and maybe darker toned fruit and balsamic. But I think his wines really strike a beautiful balance of having some of those characteristics, but then such a finesse about them, and not over the top, not overdone. Very traditional style, so you're not getting a lot of oak influence, even though they do age 4, sometimes 5 years in large barrel. But I just think that it's what I love about Barolo. It's that power, but that grace.
Yeah. And now, you know, I did mention that the word modern, and I know that's something that in the past had been the idea of a modern versus a traditional Barolo had been a highly contentious debate. And what I keep hearing now is that the differences are lessening, that maybe the more modern producers are laying off the new oak and making maybe using more sustainability in the vineyards, that sort of thing, and the more traditional producers are cleaning up their act. Is that accurate? How would you kind of would you characterize yourself as modern or traditional, or are there better words for that? And is that debate still a robust debate? And I'd love to hear your opinion on that as well, Kevin.
Well, what I have to say, I don't want to put myself into a character, absolutely, because I think that I not belong to a character, absolutely. I think that modernism is useful because it was really tiring working the our hills and in the past, and it's my grandfather would use everything we can use now to simplify the work. It is absolutely a good thing. But the problem is that a lot of producers started to seduce the market with a wine that was not typical, and it was not our expression, the expression of our soil. The base was the big struggle was the barrique in the end, because the exasperation of this test of barrique was the main characteristic of this modernism. Our Barolo doesn't need nothing. Barolo and other wines that we produce on the soil of the Barolo, the Barbera, the Nebbiolo, and so on, don't need nothing more. We have a complexity of a test, of scent, of structure, of a body that it's incredible. And the homologation, it's the worst mistake that we can make, because our typicity, it's our proudness and our power, mm-hmm. our possibility in the world.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people focus on oak because it has that ability to overpower some of the fruit or terroir flavors, right? It's such a small part of the whole story, but it's such a focal point for so many that I find that even myself, it's one of the first questions I ask when I taste Barolo, unfortunately, is what kind of oak are you using? How are you aging it? How much, you know, what percentage is new and all of that. But that's something I appreciate about your wines is that you don't pick up the oaky flavors at all, and you let the terroir just shine through.
But it is.
Do people in Barolo actually discuss the terms modern and traditional, or is that something that outsiders kind of use to oversimplify what's going on?
Actually, also innovators are coming back, made a U-turn, and they are coming back to the traditional.
To the traditional,
because
yeah.
they understood that it's also less expensive, because it's really expensive to have a barriques and so on. But
use the newest technology and use barriques. But from what I understand, though, organic viticulture is actually much more expensive than
it is.
It's, you know, it's much easier. It's less labor to just spray some stuff and get out of there.
You have a lot of work more to do with the organic, because for example, you have to make we make desserts by hand, and a mechanical dessert, and not with the chemical product. And this way you have to go directly and to cut the grass with the machines, and it takes a lot of time. And time is really important, because when you are a family winery, your time is important. You don't have so many people working with you, and you have to do a lot of the work by yourself. And also, we try to not spray if it's not necessary. We all only use oligo elements, copper, sulfum, mm-hmm. and so on. And also into the cellar, we use sulfites, but less than half the quantity is swallowed, because it's necessary for this wine to use sulfite.
Yeah. Yeah, and Kevin, are you finding that people are still discussing modern and traditional? I know that I do when I talk with our guests and with our staff, but I feel like maybe I'm becoming old fashioned.
No, I definitely hear those terms thrown around. I'm, you know, catching myself. I think it's less and less about, you know, modern traditional and what is, you know, what wines are balanced and drinkable, and you know I have no problem with a little bit of oak, you know, as long as it's in balance and you're still getting the story of what the grape and the land is about.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And Raffaele, in terms of the sustainability in your vineyards, you were telling me before that when it was first started, any sort of technology, anything that would make life easier, was accepted. But it sounds like you're starting to make some changes to kind of lessen the amount of the chemicals that you might use in the vineyards.
I told you before that we live directly in the middle of our vineyards, mm-hmm. so it's for our
your own health. Yeah.
So I think that the future is to move completely to organic. Organic doesn't mean to go with the to go into vineyards with the you have to use the technology that is safe, not the technology that hurts you. It's obvious. You don't have to do nothing that can hurt you and your customers in yeah. the end.
And as someone who has a medical degree and works in the medical profession, can you confidently say that And a wine that is organic is more healthful for the drinker as well. Are there traces of pesticides and agrochemicals left in the wine after the winemaking process for the people who...
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely. I can say that in the end, the grape can concentrate this product because they are in the soil, because we spray directly on the soil. When we don't use it, but a lot of people is making treatments directly at the bottom of the vines, and we spray in the air. We make and in the end there is the process of crushing that mix everything there is on the skin of the clusters directly into the wine. So it's difficult to say it's clean. It's completely clean.
Yeah. Well, you know, thank you for verifying, and now I feel even better about drinking more sustainably produced wines. I always felt good about, but hearing from a doctor, I feel like. That being said, I'm excited to taste what's in the glass in front of us. What have you brought for us?
Barolo, 2008, Reserve.
Wow.
This is really a big man, big old man with... elegant man who's have something to say for next 10 years, I think.
This is beautiful. So 2008 is maybe the youngest vintage that we're really showing at our restaurants now, because Barolo is such a wine that needs so much age. How would you describe this vintage?
The 2008.
Yes.
2008 was equilibrated by the weather, first of all, and when the weather is there's equilibrium since from the beginning, you can obtain the structure and the elegance, and it's everything at the right place. You don't have too much alcohol that hurts you. It's not a hot wine. It's a wine that has 14 degrees enough, but. In the end, you don't feel the alcohol, you feel only these velvety tannins that wash your mouth, very long in mouth. And the typicity of this wine are this complexity of testings that starts from dry flowers, mostly licorice, tobacco, leather, gudrun, a little bit of menthol too in the end.
The texture is what's really blowing me away. It has a very classic, complex nose, but there's a lot of tannin, but they're so fine and supple.
At the beginning, a single bottle may explode because it's really concentrated. But in the end, they go really, really smoother. And it's the complexity. It's difficult for us to present our wines on the normal market. We are always late on the market because we exit late because we bottle later than other wineries. Mm. And we want to say to our customers, and this is a possibility, speaking by radio, you have to give time to this wine because it will pay. That will pay.
And is this the current release on the market right now, 2008?
Yeah, it's quite at the end.
At the end of it, Reserva Paiana. And do you make the Reserva every vintage?
No, absolutely. We only in the vintage we believe they can support the aging.
2009, no?
2009 was too fast.
Too hot.
It's a really, really great wine, but as is more approachable than this one. And it's running. And so we prefer to sell it directly without making reserve.
2010 for sure, yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, everyone's so happy.
Actually, our 2010 is bottled, but we suggest to not drink it into at least 6 months.
Wow. Yeah, this is great. And if you can still get your hands on the 2008, I definitely would.
Yeah.
Guys, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure to have you both in the studio today. This kind of cold, foggy weather just makes me think of, think of Barolo, of Piedmont, and your wine is just absolutely beautiful.
So, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Joe.
Thanks. And yeah, and look out, guys, for Vinaioli. They have lots of delicious wines. We've had some other Vinaioli producers on the show, like Bruno de Concilis. And I think we have a few more lined up as well. So yeah, look out for those episodes in the future. Thanks so much to all of you guys for listening. This has been In the Drink on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.